Welcome to the January 21st, 2020 session of TeamSpeak for Tangerine SDR. My name is Dave, KV0S, and this week I got part of my IQ2 back from Scotty, and it works great, Scotty, so thank you very much for fixing that. And I've been testing it with all the different computer and radio combinations, and while I get the same pops that Dan gets on the Odroid with Lin at HPSDR, I do not get them at the same sample rate on the NVIDIA Jetson Nano. So just a little piece of information, that's the $99 board. So for just a few more dollars, it takes care of that problem. So that's it. I've been doing some programming, other things, but that's the bulk of what I need to report. Next on the list, we have Dave, KD5EAG, KD0EAG. Sorry, Dave. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello, everybody. I have been working on the project related stuff a good bit the last few days. Nothing exciting, but I was getting a board together to send to Scotty. Unfortunately, I'm still seem to be unable to solder the I squared C differential chip. It's just too small for me. The thermometer chips I'm having no trouble with, and it may be my footprint that I'm using on my something about it. You know, the solder mask is too close or something. I just can't solder I can't keep it in place. But other than that, things are going along well. Done some work on code, been making all my machines work, and I've got pretty much everything. I've got the Tangerine, I've got the NVIDIA Nano, and everything else seems to be working pretty well. I built Lin HPSDR on the Xavier, the NVIDIA Xavier, and boy, the calculation of the wisdom file for the for FFTW3 is way faster than it is on my i7 six core 32 gig machine. So, who knows? But otherwise, I'm just trying to get things to where they need to be. That's it for me. Over.
Thanks, Dave. And next on our list, we have Mike, AA8K, shown as recording in a way. And we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak sessions to tsarchive.tangerinesdr.com. Also, Mike has been producing some images. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, thanks very much, Dave, and greetings to everyone on the meeting. Over.
Well, fine business, Mike. And next on the list, we have Nathan, W2NAF. Go ahead, Nathan.
Thank you very much, Dave. Things are going fine here. Let's see, I was in Boston last week for the American Meteorological Society meeting, and I got to give a presentation on what the ham radio community needs from the space weather community and what the space weather community needs from the ham radio community. I think it was well received, and Bill's going to be going to a workshop down in Florida right after Hamcation to try and connect some of the data from the RBN and WhisperNet and PSK Reporter and things like that with the NASA CCMC, the modeling center that they have to test some propagation models. So we'll see how that goes. Otherwise, I've been working on some analysis here, still trying to look at some Doppler shifts from WWV eclipse data, and hopefully what we learn from this will eventually end up in a paper and will also hopefully help us know how to process the observations that we get from the Personal Space Weather Station. So W2NAF, back to Net.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Tom in 5EG. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good evening, Dave. Good evening to everybody on the list. Pretty quiet week. I put together some notes and sent to Scotty on how to do layout on the receiver. Other than that, it's been pretty quiet. Back to everyone else.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Scotty, WA2DFI. Go ahead, Scotty.
Okay, well, good evening, everyone. Thank you, Dave, and thanks again for running everything as usual. Great job. This week, got some time to put in on the DE, that trying to figure out the jigsaw puzzle of connecting the FPGA I/O up to the different blocks that are already drawn. So having some fun with that. And also ended up having to make a Cortis project to check some of the connections, because the documentation is really helpful. It says you should build a project in Cortis and connect up the pins and see what Cortis says, because we're not going to tell you in the documentation here. We're going to let the software tell you. So it becomes fun. Have to build a basically a blank project and start adding pins to it. So it's a good check, and hopefully by the end of the schematic drawing exercise, we'll have a basically a template project that has all the pins assigned and that we can export to anyone who wants to help. And I don't know if I told anyone on the list here last week, but I got an email from somebody who was a QEX reader, and they put me in touch with a guy from Calgary who is an expert FPGA designer. I guess maybe I did tell you guys this, but anyway, we're going to meet up at Hamcation. So it'll be, looks like it's going to shape up to be a pretty fun time, and get some social networking going, and maybe get another FPGA designer on board. He seems to be interested in the project, so that's always a good sign. And then worked a little bit with Tom. By the way, Tom, that's a great first start document you got for to give to the layout guy. Layout guy has been primed, and he's free to start working on the RF board next week. So you'll start getting at least started getting a read in next week. So that should be good. And I think that's about everything for this week. So back over to you, Dave.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Bill, AB4EJ. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, thanks, Dave, and good evening to the net. I have been working with just basically giving a smoke test to the sample system that I have, where I have a data engine simulator talking to the main control unit and the main control program. And I'm controlling that with a web-based system that uses Flask and Forms WTF for allowing me to control the data engine, at least a simulated one. And I'm able to turn on data acquisition, and the data comes, and I'm running, simulating a single channel running at 192,000 samples per second, and saving that as digital RF, and I let that run for 24 hours to look for memory leaks and other things like that, and it successfully did that. I've got the ring buffer working, where it recognizes, well, in this case, I'm letting it run up to 1 gig until it starts pruning off the oldest data, but it will run at any size. If you want it to run at a terabyte, it will do that, or at 5 terabytes or whatever. And so I have tested that, and I will be able to demonstrate that in Orlando. I do have a couple of questions for Scotty regarding how we're going to do a few things once we get back into the open discussions point. So anyway, back to Net, AB4EJ.
Fine business, Bill. And next on the list, we have Dan, N4XWE. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, just fine.
Okay, great. I upgraded my software, my OS, from Linux 19.04 or Ubuntu 19.04 to 19.10, and I've been having some issues with it, mostly the driver for the wireless dongle that I have stuck in here. Anyway, looking forward to seeing everybody in Orlando in a couple of weeks, and did a little bit of work with the Odroid N2 trying to make Pulse Audio work better. Was semi-successful. Did learn a lot about Pulse Audio that I probably never really wanted to know, but found out partly by accident. And did a little bit more with the AIM SBC, and let's see, I guess that's about it. Back to you, Dave.
Well, fine business, Dan. And that brings us to the end of the list, so we're open for general discussion.
Hi, Scotty. Quick question. I got the document you sent me about naming convention. How do you enter the directional arrows on the signal lines?
Are you talking about the little black arrows that I put next to the lines? Or are you talking about the off-page connectors?
The little black ones next to the lines.
They are just lines. So what I do is, since I have them in both directions, I just cut them and paste them in. And the trick is that to paste them in right next to the line, you have to go up to the top and turn off jump to grid, because they're off grid, but they're only comment lines, so it don't matter. It's just that don't forget to turn grid, jump the grid back on before you place anything else. Otherwise, things will be bad.
Okay. Are these characters that you created, or is there a keystroke you enter to create it?
No, it's made up of three lines as opposed to nets. It's just three black lines. And but I went in and I drew it off grid, and I don't even group it or anything. So when I want another one, I just cut it out and paste it in. And it's kind of a nuisance, because in order to cut it out properly, if you place one of them in between two lines that are on 10th inch centers, you can't grab the whole thing without grabbing the one above it, unless you turn off the jump to grid, snap to grid. And it's in the upper toolbar, and I think it's the second one from the right hand end. And when you click it, it turns red, and that means you can place your cursor anywhere on the screen. When you click it off and it turns back gray, the cursor only will snap to 10th inch grid lines.
Oh boy. Okay. I think I understand it. I'll probably have to email you for the exact set of menu steps.
What I would do is I would open the, well, I didn't send you never mind, that won't work. It's going to say I can send you an ORCAD sheet with those on it, and you could just cut and paste them. That's what I do. And the interesting thing is, if you cut them and paste them, it puts them at the same offset as they are with the grid turned off, even though your grid's turned on. But if you try to drag them, select them and drag them, it snaps to the grid then, and then they're off.
Okay, very good. Well, go ahead and send me an ORCAD of that page, and I'll see if I'll try it a few times, and if I totally hose things up, I'll abandon. Otherwise, I'll try to populate the schematic with them. Thanks.
Okay, sure, no problem. I made some changes on the bank selections for the RFMs, and it's really a pain in the neck, because they tell you get 500 IOs, but you really don't get 500 IOs, because they forget to tell you when you use a DDR3 RAM, there's about 16 pins that you are forbidden from using, and so you don't really get all 500 IOs. So, and of course, what I want to do is I want the RFMs to be individually strappable for VCC IO, so that we can mix a 1.8 volt one with a 2.5 volt one or a 3.3 volt one. And I think I've succeeded in doing that, but we may end up having to strap both RFMs to the same voltage. And I don't know if you think that's a disadvantage. So in other words, if you won't be able to mix two different RFMs that operate at different voltages on the same board at the same time if we do it that way. Do you think that's important, that we be able to use two different ones?
I don't know. Obviously, it's the most flexible, you know, and so, you know, it's the one that will present the least, what the heck, why didn't you guys do this kind of a question? But, you know, if we can't do it, we can't do it.
Well, the thing is that each RF board has two clock outputs that have to go to the FPGA. That's no problem, figuring those out. The problem is, there's no way I can get the banks to line up properly and have the banks generate the clock FPGA clock output on a clock output pin, because there's just not enough of them in the right banks to have them be the right voltage. However, you can generate the clock out on any I/O pin in the FPGA. It's just that the skew and the delay are a little bit higher when you don't use a dedicated clock output pin. So I think what I'm going to end up doing is using a dedicated clock output on RFM0 and a programmable I/O on RFM1. So that'll make the skew a little bit better on RFM0 than RFM1, but it's only going to be a fraction of a nanosecond, so I don't really think it's going to matter.
Okay, well, you know, I'm in thinking about the clocks, the clock that comes into the receiver module, is that coming from the clock module or is that coming from the FPGA?
Well, we've got 8 clock inputs, so we're going to have a clock from the clock module, the clock generator, whatever you want to call it. So we're going to have three coherent clocks, one to each RF module and one to the FPGA generated by the clock module. And then we're going to have each clock module is going to have 2 clock outputs, and they're going to correspond to the output from each of 2 A to D converters. So really the clock in is not nearly as important as the clock out, because the data from the ADCs is going to be source synchronous with those output clocks.
Yeah. So the in looking over the schematic, give me a second, I haven't picked this thing up in a month. You know, it's got one differential input clock from the FPGA to the receiver module, and then there is a data clock out from the receiver module to the FPGA, but there's only one of those, it's differential, and so the dual channel RFM only provides one clock to the FPGA.
Right, and then both of the the ADC channels data are synchronous with that one clock, right?
Yes, and that clock is programmable in, like, I think 1 nanosecond time increments.
Well, that you mean for aligning the setup and hold times of the data?
Yes, yeah, you can. There's a register in the A to D converter chip that lets you set the exactly where that clock is with respect to the data.
Okay, and our spec on the 140-pin connector has 2 of those, because I was figuring if we had used 2 different ADCs, then we would have 2 of those clocks. It would have, because we have 2 output data buses on the connector. So the idea is one clock goes with one and one clock goes with the other. So if you had 2 independent ADCs, you could clock their input clocks together with the single clock coming from the FPGA. And then their output clocks would be separate, but they'd be synchronized each with its own data.
Okay, so again, the clock that comes into the receiver module, doesn't that come from the clock module or does that come from the FPGA?
There's actually one of each. And ideally, you really want to use the clock module version. But so here's the deal. If you have the poor man's DE, you don't have a clock module. So you basically need to use the FPGA clock, which is going to be lower performance because it's going to be higher jitter, more noise on it. And you really don't want to do that, except in the case where you don't really want to buy a clock module. So we're willing to deal with that. However, we still have to deal with how are we going to tell the RF module which clock to use, because it's going to get a clock from both. If the one from the clock generator is there. If it's not, then it'll be only getting one from the FPGA. So I was thinking I could do it with 0 ohm resistors on the DE board, and I think we can lay it out so that you won't get any stubs. Or we could try to do it on the RF module and, you know, ship it programmed one particular way, but it will allow the user to change it to the other way if they want.
Okay, right now I have the oscillator clock connected to the signal on the A to D converter, and I have no connects on the FPGA clocks coming into the receiver module.
Right. Okay. So that's the high performance version, and that's what we want for the personal space weather station. So, and since this is a high performance board that you're making, maybe we just leave it like that, and we have a lower performance board that has a cheaper A to D on it, and we hook it to the FPGA clock, because that RF module will likely be used with the lower end DE that doesn't have a clock module associated with it.
Okay. We can discuss it later when we get down to the end, but if I need to make those something different than no connect, do let me know.
Yeah, we may want to put some zero ohm resistors right at the connector and flow them into the other clock lines. And I know we can maybe do this. I've done this trick before with zero ohm resistors, where you actually put two zero ohm resistors side by side. And if you mount the resistors the conventional way, you get the lines one way. If you rotate them 90 degrees, which is not per the silk screen, but if you rotate them, you can cross the lines over. So you can basically get a zero stub crossover between two sets of lines. And the input lines coming in that are unused, the stubs don't matter on those because they're only point to point, FPGA to RF module or clock module to RF module.
Okay. Do we really expect the user to move a pair of 04, 02 resistors on the board?
Well, a couple ways we could do it. We could make them 08, 05 so they could have a possibility to do it. I'm thinking more this is going to be a manufacturing option so that we can manufacture it either way, but I don't want to preclude the user from doing that if they really want to do it. So we could make them big enough so that it would be much easier for them.
Yeah, gosh, okay. I'm worried about adding another two large components to the board just because you saw the layout. I'm worried about space.
That's kind of humorous, Tom, that 0805s we consider large.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, maybe my brain's been too focused on 0402 parts.
Yeah, if I thought we could do it with a jumper, I would be happy to do that, but I think that's going to just be too much of an impedance bump for us at the speeds we're going.
Yeah, okay. Let me think about how to do this, and I may change the schematic.
Well, we could do it on the DE if you think it'd be more appropriate, but I think there's probably going to be more room on the RF board than the DE. So I don't know how to make that decision.
Yeah, I think it's lots easier to do on the receiver and much more difficult to do on the DE. So I'll go ahead and try and put that on the receiver.
Okay, yeah, anything you can come up with is be awesome because I've been racking my brain trying to figure out a no-brainer way. But keep in mind that if you put resistors, this probably violates all of the rules that Dave has for the CAD. But if you put the resistors close enough, it ends up being a square array of pads, and you can end up putting the resistors either horizontal or vertical, and one way swaps the lines and one way leaves them straight. And we did this because we actually had to build a interface board for a single board computer, a development kit, and the guys who were running this, building the single board computer, could not tell me which they labeled the serial lines TXD and RXD, but they wouldn't tell me reference to what end. So I didn't know which direction they were in. So I put the four resistors on there, horizontal or vertical, to swap both TXD and RXD. And sure enough, they came out with the board with them reversed. And so we ended up having to switch them in manufacturing and do our little trick. And it worked like a charm.
Okay, I'll put four zero ohm resistors, 0805 size, or two of them. However, if I can, the pads that I've seen are normally not square pads on the resistors. Each land end on a resistor is a rectangular pad. So if you rotate the resistors, you're going to try to solder across the wrong axis of a pad.
Yeah, except that we can get Dave to make us a special set of pads that are square so that we can do this. I've done this before, so it's just a matter of using a special pad. And believe it or not, the rectangular ends of the resistor will center in the pad, whichever way you turn it.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. I'm no expert in that.
And you might consider using 0603s unless you think they're too small.
Okay, now 0603s are, I've done those by hand. They're usually pretty easy.
Yeah, so they wouldn't be so blatantly huge as 0805s.
Okay, I'll make them 0603s. Thanks.
All right, sounds good. Hey, Dan, I wanted to tell you that Anna is coming to Hamcation.
Really? Okay. So I guess I need to prepare myself mentally for that, eh?
Yeah, and she's coming with her wife, so double preparation.
Oh, good Lord. Okay. All righty. Thanks for the heads up.
It'll be great to see her again, but it'll be great to see her again.
Okay.
Hey, David, this is Nathaniel. Have you talked to Frankie Bonte at all recently?
Nothing new this week, I don't think, but I did exchange email. I don't know, maybe it was early this week. Nothing, no details on what she's been trying to do or whether she's been successful in getting the things I sent her to work. I probably should follow up on that maybe tomorrow.
That sounds good. What did you send her exactly?
I actually sent her one of the magnetometer modules with the pin soldered on, and they have an evaluation board that allows you to use it with I2C or SPI or serial or I don't know what all. It's a board that PNI sells, and I had bought one to try and figure out what was going on with the with the numbers I was getting, and so I sent it to them, and it should be able to work rather simply with, you know, pretty much any PC or something. But I need to follow up.
That sounds good. Thanks for doing that.
Hey, Dave, do you want to drop me a board or two and the two parts in first class mail, and I'll see if I can solder them on and send them back to you?
Well, I was trying to make you I may do that. I was going to send you I was trying to make one that was the most complete, you know, the latest version of the layout and everything. And I have that almost finished, but so far it did not seem to work, and I assume it's because I've got some pins crossed. I would probably remove the device that's suspect, and I'll send you some of the pins, some of the devices. I probably have plenty of them, along with the board. I'll send one or two boards along.
So you think that the part you tried to solder down has a short under it or something, which is preventing the rest of the board from working?
What happens with any of these, if any of these I squared C, there's essentially three I squared C, is it three devices on the bus when I'm done? No, yeah, three. And if one of them, you know, if a pin is bridged and you just do an I2C detect in Linux, what you see is that particular, on a particular I2C bus, you get timeouts. And that's what I see whenever I've got, you know, whenever something's not right. I've had, occasion where that came up doing the temperature sensor, but those are easy to fix. These others are just, you know, a silly few micrometers too small for me to work with.
Okay, but the boards that don't work are the ones that have the super small parts on that you tried to solder on, and that's, you're suspecting that's where the problem is then, right? The boards worked before?
I was trying to build one up complete, so I don't know if they work in other ways, yes. And I'm able to read and write read and talk to both the magnetometer and the temperature sensor without any problem.
Okay, so the part that's the small part is the I2C extender.
Yeah, it's a real bugger.
It doesn't have an underneath pad, does it?
No, thankfully. And neither does the temperature version of the temperature sensor I'm using. So that hasn't been a problem.
So the problem is it's just like 0.5 millimeter pitch, and it's hard to get the iron in there?
Yeah, 0.65, no problem. But 0.5, it's not even so much that they're too small. It's that they're too close together to solder well with any method I've tried.
Yeah, okay. Well, I've been successful in doing 0.5 millimeter pitch on connectors, so as long as there's some metal exposed on the pin and the pad together, I think I'll be able to do it.
Well, somebody other than me is going to have to do those, but actually it takes me quite a while to build one of these boards. So I have a smaller version of the board that doesn't use that at all. The idea was to use an external extender, and if it comes to it, you know, maybe we can go with that. But I also thought somebody was likely to want to use some other mechanism than the I2C extender to put distance between the DE and the sensor and the magnetometer, such as, you know, LoRa or something else.
Yeah, okay. I think in our application, though, we're probably going to all be using the extender to get it to 100 feet away. So have you tried anything with wires in between, with the extender and wires in between, or haven't? I guess you haven't. You haven't been able to get one soldered down.
Well, unfortunately, since the pinout we used for the mag jack, and it's not a mag jack, well, it's just, you know, for the RJ45 jack, since it doesn't correspond to the Spark Fun ones, I really can't test it meaningfully against those, even if I have them soldered right.
Well, you have to use a pair of your own, right?
Yeah, that was the idea, and I haven't been able to get even one to work.
Okay, well, like I said, if you want to send me a couple, I'll solder. I think we have enough time. I can solder them and send them back to you. And then if they test out, then we can use one of those for hamcation or a different one.
And do you really need one for hamcation that's functional in that way?
No, not really. I just need to show that there's a board that's in. It has. I'd like one with a PMOD connector. Well, actually, it doesn't even matter. I'm not going to have a DE in time. So it really doesn't matter. But and since we're not going to actually be running it, but it would be good to have something to show. So, yeah, one of the other ones would work.
Yeah, well, the PMOD connector is probably the most brain-dead thing of the whole thing, because that's trivial. That's nothing, except that I never did get a good feeling that I was talking about the same thing on the pinout on that connector that you were talking about. So I don't know for sure but it should be possible to work with it anyway.
Well, the pinout is, if you get 3 volts in ground on the two pins, 3 volts on two pins, or sorry, 5 volts on two pins, it's going to be strappable for 3 or 5, but the IO is always going to have to be 3 volts on the PMOD, because the pins are going to connect directly to the FPGA. And pins 1 through 4 and 7, 8, 9, and 10 just go to the FPGA, so they can be programmed any way you want. So as long as you put the I2C pins on 1 through 4 or 7 through 11, it'll work.
Well, I've got it on one or the other of that set, and I tried to do it following the updated whatever the PMOD people, the Digilent people, their new standard for that. But I only did it on one or the other of the two options.
Okay, well, that's fine. I mean, there can be a Rev A and a Rev B, especially since they're pretty easy to tweak. But I think if you've got them on the top 4 pins of either side, then it'll work. We can make it work.
I'll send you a schematic.
And I think we visited this before, because I've seen your schematic and I commented on it, and I think it was good.
Well, yeah, I kept asking you about this point, and I never got an answer to the last time I tried to get a clarification about it. And I kind of decided to stop bothering y'all with it.
Oh, don't ever do that. We love being bothered. So just send me a schematic. I'll check it out and take 2 seconds to figure out whether we're on the same page or not.
Will do.
And you got my mailing address, right?
Yep.
Hi, this is Bill. First of all, my sympathies to Dave EAG about trying to solder the I2C chips. I was never able to be successful with it either on the ones I've tried. But I did have a question for Scotty about the communication with the small board computer regarding setting up the channels. I'm thinking that the small board computer main control system is going to need to send the DE a request to set a channel and pick a center frequency and a bandwidth. Now, Scotty, what is your thinking on this as far as how that should work? Should there be a data package that comes to the data engine that sets all 16 channels at once, or one at a time to set each channel? Or there's various ways of doing this. What do you think is going to work the best? Go ahead.
Well, if each channel is going to come in on a separate stream, a UDP stream, then I would suggest setting each channel individually. Because basically what you want to do is you want to have a control stream for each data stream. And that control stream is responsible for setting center frequency, data rate, with all the parameters of that stream that's coming in. And so I would guess then what's going to happen is if we open up 8 data streams all at the same time, we're going to have the streams going to the single board computer IP address, but to 8 different ports. Is that your thinking too?
Well, I hadn't gotten that far as thinking how it's going to work. All right. So you said the data rate, and what else are we going to set for each channel?
We're going to set basically all the characteristics of the data stream that you're requesting. So it'll be center frequency, it'll be width, it'll be data rate, it'll be, what other characteristics can you have? It'll be format of the channel. So is it going to be, you know, IQ? Is it going to be IIQQ, IIQQ? Is it going to be, and when we get to the point where we're doing multiple synchronous ADCs, you may end up having a format that's interleaved. So it'll be I0, Q0, I1, Q1, like that. But we don't have to define all that now. All we have to do is define a channel, a format type, and, you know, type 0, and say that's the first one we're going to implement. Maybe it's the only one we implement, but we have the capability to define it any way we want.
All right, and you said 8 streams. Is that just a version 1, or is there going to be 16 at some point?
I think 8 is what we had agreed on originally, and I think we'll be pushing it to do 8. So I would stick with 8 for now.
When we say 8 streams, are we talking about we're going to support a total of 8? Because we talked about 16 at one point, where 8 channels, but with 2 antennas on each, which works out to 16. I'm not pushing for one thing or the other. I'm just wanting to know what we're really talking about here. Go ahead.
No, we're talking about 8 virtual receivers. And that would be, I see what you're getting at, because since our RF board's 2 channels, you could theoretically have 8 channels on each receiver. But I think this opening salvo of the data engine is going to have trouble with 16 channels. So if you want to do 4 per receiver, or Nathaniel, do you remember how we spec this?
I'm sorry, how we spec how many receivers we had again?
Yeah, because we're going to have, the RF board's going to have 2 channels. So there's 2 ADDs. So there's 2 antennas, 2 ADDs, 2 channels into the data engine. And then I'm sure I remember we were talking about 8 virtual channels. So would that be 4 virtual per receiver, or are we talking about 8 per receiver?
I think we basically said as many as we could fit on the FPGA. So if you have potentially 2 per receiver, 1 for each of the antennas, so you could get the polarization information.
Yeah, Scotty, when we wrote the original spec, we said 8 virtual receivers per physical channel. And the objective was to try to handle that at 192K, and I think we've realized that's too much. However, you know, we could still have 8 virtual channels, but the data rate could be a lot lower.
So we could have 8 at 96K maybe, or you could have 4 each at 192K.
Or something. You know, I mean, they could even be, you know, they could even be less than that. But the original request was for 8 virtual channels per physical receiver channel.
Okay, and then we want to make sure we have 2 physical receivers because our board has 2 ADDs, so we want to utilize that phase information between the two, except figuring that you're going to have different antennas on the two, like different polarization or something, right?
Yeah, and each channel will be, you know, 2 pieces of information that together tell us about the polarization, you know, so you have to go through some math to pull them apart, but they are exactly completely coherent between the two channels.
Yeah, so it'd be much more important to have 4 on antenna A and 4 on antenna B than 8 on antenna A and just not look at antenna B.
Well, all right, the original requirements document specified 8 virtual channels per receiver physical channel. So if you have a 2 channel receiver, that's a total of 16 virtual channels, 8 on the left-hand side of the A to D converter chip and 8 on the other side of the dual A to D converter chip.
Right, and our original plan was to have a dual channel from the beginning, right? 2 receivers on a board?
Correct.
So I guess, Bill, the answer was it was 16. I'm a little skeptical I'm going to be able to fit that in the FPGA, but we will see. We'll put as many as we can in.
Well, going back to the idea of wanting to make this something that's going to be appealing to hams, I believe we need to, irrespective of the high-speed channels that are going to be collecting data, we need to have the ability to collect 6 or 8 channels of data for FT8 and or Whisper. And given that those only require 4,000 samples per second to decode properly, I'm hoping that we can figure out how to make all that work concurrently, because that's what's going to be needed to make the system work as a what I would call a local propagation analyzer for the ham to use. Now, since 4,000 samples per second is a pretty low data rate in comparison to the hundreds that we've been talking to, I'm hoping we're going to be able to make that work. I just want people to keep that in mind, that if we're going to make this something that's going to appeal to the average ham, we need to include this, what I call the local propagation assistant. So we can, what I'm hoping is we can make that work, that the ham can have their little cake and eat it too. They can collect data that shows them what their local propagation conditions are, but at the same time, we're collecting whatever capacity we have available also for the science data we can run at the same time. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So we could actually, most likely the, FT8 data is going to be on one antenna, and or maybe so the idea is that the stream should be able to be assignable to either ADC. I guess that's another parameter. So where's the source ADC? How wide is it? How fast is it? What's the center frequency, et cetera, et cetera. Now, some of these things are going to be dictated by hardware. So if you ask for a 32-bit wide ADC, you're going to be told no. But if you ask for what's available in the hardware, you could be told yes. And we may be able to, if the FT8 receivers take a lot less volume in the FPGA, or area, I should say, then we may be able to put 16 of those on one receiver, plus the couple of 192K channels on each of the antennas, all at the same time.
Right, yeah. So there's no requirement that every receiver has to be the same size, right?
That's correct. So that's the thing, is you would ask for a different stream then for an FT8 window than you would for a personal space weather station propagation analytic window.
Because I'm thinking about the Pavel Demin's implementation that runs on the Red Pitaya. He's able to run 8 FT8 channels. Now, 8 FT8, if you connect this to a fan dipole, I know Phil has done this, I have done this, you will get 8 channels worth of stuff. But I'm thinking that the new system we're putting together, the Tangerine, should be able to collect 8 channels worth of FT8 data and 8 channels worth of whisper data and collect some science data at the same time due to its much more powerful capability than what's in the Red Pataya. I'll go ahead.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We have a lot more logic available in this board than the Red Pataya does. So if they can do it, we can do it better.
All right. Well, I think we need to set aside some time to have a long, serious conversation about this at Orlando, because I'm at the point where I'm ready to start putting together some, what would we say, prototypical software that would be able to do some of this stuff. But right now I'm still fuzzy on the details, and I'm hoping we can figure some of that out in the next couple of weeks, because that way I can implement, even if I don't have Tangerine hardware to work with, I can implement something that's kind of like it in this, in the data engine simulator, so that we'll be ready to play with some of that stuff. I think here's the thing, that the logic of how we do this is really, to me, a fairly substantial challenge. The logic of how we design, how we're going to command this thing such that we know what it's doing, that we don't get all tangled up in what are we actually requesting this thing to do, because it's very easy for something as complex as this to get into an unknown state, and we absolutely need to avoid that.
I agree, but I think that also we can build a foundation upon which we can lay lots of complex functions, but we don't have to implement them all now. We just have to not constrict ourselves. So we can definitely spend some time at Hamcation talking about this. I'm kind of behind on the hardware, or I'd be working on this, because the next thing that needs to be done while we're off building hardware, we need to get this going. And your simulator is awesome, because that's going to be a great way to test out some of these things, to find out how underwater we are on our ideas before we actually commit them to FPGA code. But I don't know, when are you getting into Orlando? I'm going to be in there on Wednesday early evening, like 5 o'clock. I'm coming in early so I don't have to rush around. So pretty much I've got all day Thursday open. So if you're going to get there early enough, we can spend some time then away from the madding crowd.
Yes, exactly. I told my daughter I'm coming in on Wednesday as well, so that I can work with you on Thursday.
Okay, and the group that I'm with, we've rented a house for 5 days. So we got, and nobody's going to be there until Thursday evening. So we basically have it to ourselves all day Thursday. So it'll be a peaceful place.
Oh, and man, it's party.
And it's 2 blocks from the fairgrounds.
Oh, boy, I would be suspect on the documentation that comes out of that.
Can't hardly beat that.
Yeah, it depends on how much alcohol is involved in the documentation.
All right. Well, I will be there, and we will coordinate so that we can get together and come out with a plan, at least a phase 1 plan on how this thing is going to work. I appreciate your understanding. There's a lot of this. There's a learning curve for me on this, but we'll get it figured out.
Well, I appreciate how far you've come already with basically no input from me. So it's impressive, Bill.
Well, but on the other hand, it may be something that's so far afield from what we really need to do as to have to be thrown out, which is fine. It doesn't bother me, because I've learned an awful lot as far as, how to make all this asynchronous stuff work together. We still isn't perfected, but I got it to where it works 90% of the time. So that I feel like I'm making progress.
Yeah, it does sound like good progress. So I'm looking forward to seeing. Is this something you can bring to Hamcation that we can set up and you can show off?
Yeah. I'm planning on bringing all this stuff. Basically, I've got 2 OR droids and a little 4-port gigabit switch. And I bring the monitors and stuff, and you connect it up in its own little network, and you fire up the data engine simulator on one of the Odroids, and you fire up the main control and the web thing on the other thing, and you tell it to start, and you can go through and do different configurations, some of which are just stubs and dummies. But then I tell it to start collecting data, and the data engine simulator starts pumping out data at about the same, at 192 KLS samples per second, a single channel. And the other one is pushing it out to it's a portable USB hard drive, and then a little ring buffer running, and it's observing how much data is out there and deleting the oldest stuff. So it's simulating our first set of requirements.
All right, that sounds awesome. I want to see this.
Yeah, I'll bring it all.
Yeah, that sounds great, Bill. I'm looking forward to seeing it too.
Is anyone going to video the activities at Hamcation?
Oh yeah, they didn't video last year, so I don't know. I'll ask them if they have any capability, but I'm going to say probably not.
Okay, no problem.
Unless we can twist Dave's arm into coming out.
Is that a reference to me?
Yeah, that was. It was a sideways jab to see if you're awake.
I am awake.
Well, Dave, responding quickly, you just saved yourself.
And we're ready to vote on it.
I know how these trains come. Yeah, I'm starting teaching tomorrow.
I thought you were retired.
Yeah, but I have three more semesters of teaching one class a semester.
Well, you got to get some radio money, right?
Yep. It's keep me busy for a little while.
I think Mel was telling me he's busier now than he was before he retired.
That's what most people tell me.
It is true.
Yeah, that's true. It's quite normal.
I can't imagine being busier than I am now, and I'm not retired yet.
Well, you'll be busier as, but you'll be working mostly on stuff that you enjoy, as opposed to stuff that you have to do.
Yeah, I forgot to go to bed on Saturday night. I stayed up most of the night working on this thing. Once it gets quiet and you can make progress, things can happen.
Hey, I've got a comment from the Open HPSDR group last Friday. Apparently, what our discussion a couple weeks ago, or 2 weeks ago, stirred up enough interest that Phil claims he's going to put some time aside to work on DFC this year. So DFC may be coming back.
Okay, well, we'll make sure that the Cyclone 5E version of the data engine has a slot for the one of the NVIDIA boards.
Yep. So it apparently Doug... I think it's W5WC. He's the guy that works on Thetis. He got his board to work out of the last batch, but Phil couldn't get his board to work. So they have a working board, and it works both on transmit and receive.
Well, we could put a PCI Express connector on the Cyclone 5 version, couldn't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, that would have his board plug in, but that would not get us any CUDA cores.
Well, the thing is what we could probably do is plug in an RF board and just go straight to the CUDA cores.
Well, what I was hoping to do would be to put a socket, one of those 240-pin sockets on there, and plug one of those CUDA boards, one of the NVIDIA boards, right into the DE. And then you'd have RF board through the FPGA into the CUDA board, and so you'd have kind of like the best of both.
Well, the thing is the CUDA duplicates what your FPGA does, and it's just the main thing is it's simpler to program.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So then what we do is we make a stripped down version that has a Cyclone 4 FPGA on it with transceivers to so we can get a PCIe bus on there, and then just put one RF module on it instead of two, and then use a plug-in CUDA board, and we don't use Phil's board.
Yeah,
now I'm up to buying four of these tangerines.
Go ahead, Dave.
Trouble is, I'm not sure that there's any of the Cyclone, the older Cyclones, that have as much PCIe or as up-to-date PCIe as one might wish. I don't know that much about it, but I haven't been able to find one.
Yeah, have you looked at the Cyclone 5T, I think, is the high-performance one. I think they can do Gen 2 PCIe, but not any faster than that. And actually, Phil's, I think, only does Gen 2, his board.
Well, his current board.
Gen 2 is what the Nano has. The Xavier has Gen 4, but really anything Gen 2 or above is I think probably pretty good for user the purposes people are talking about here.
Especially if we can do like a 4-lane Gen 2, that's as much bandwidth as you need anyway. Yeah, and you're right. If you want to go to the newer FPGAs, get your wallet out.
Yeah, I have the little FPGA board that Phil worked with in the past, but it uses a version of the I can't remember which chip anymore, but it really is kind of at the lower limit of what's needed, and it would be preferable to have something a little more, but I haven't been able to find an affordable evaluation setup.
Yeah, I think if you find anything that does better than Gen 2 PCIe, you're on a development board, you're probably talking a kilobuck or more for the board.
Yeah, I think, well, I don't know. There's a lot of possibilities out there, though, and I don't know if there's any way to get the CERDES, the PCIe CERDES without using an FPGA. I would think someone would make some dedicated silicon for that purpose, but I haven't been able to identify any.
I think it's cheaper to buy the FPGA because I know Phil, he used a Cyclone 4 with transceivers on it, which is maybe the cheapest you're going to get. I think to get any higher performance, you're going to end up having to go to Cyclone 5 or maybe even Aria, which is going to be too expensive. See what you need. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, go ahead and finish this, but I have a quick question for Tom before he leaves.
Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I had a question about, I knew you did some GNU radio courses, and I wondered if there is... out of your course, are you using the 3.8 setup, or is it still kind of only partly there?
The course I did for the MUD conference was 3.7 on Windows 10, and that's because at that time there was no 3.8 installer available for Windows. I think there is now a 3.8 installer for Windows. I'm not sure it's fully debugged yet.
Well, I'm a Linux guy, so I do it on Linux, but I was just worried if all the modules were portable between 3.7 and 3.8.
The answer is no. Modules have to be rewritten for 3.8. My to-do list has a port open HPSDR over to 3.8, and I set up an Ubuntu 19.10 VM, and I'm starting the process. I'm trying to apply patches sent to me, but the patches fail to apply, so I'm in head-scratching mode. Everything works from the outside the same way, but the modules are not compatible between them.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be interesting. I'm trying to get geared up for spending some time refamiliarizing myself with all that, so I thought I ought to ask somebody who has a little more experience than me, and you just answered what I needed to know.
Yeah, the Debian installers for GNU Radio are pretty current, and so I was just able to do a sudo apt install GNU Radio, and it came right up.
Sounds good. I should mention, Scotty, it is time. We're at our time.
Yes, how time flies when you're having great discussions. So one last thing, Tom, you think the schedule looks okay? You think we can maybe pull this off next week?
I'll be available next week. Just I'll have the 0-ohm resistors. I'll probably draw them on the schematic as 4 separate resistors. I can't in my brain figure out how to do it drawing wise with two. I'll draw four resistors on the schematic. I'll try to populate the arrows if you'll send me the OrCAD, and then I'll be ready next week.
Okay, because I want to take some time before we go to CAD to run through the schematic real quick with and check it to make sure that meets all of our specs here.
Okay, well, if you don't care about the funky arrows, you basically have it.
Okay, well, you know, you can go ahead and add the funky arrows. That's no problem. And you, the resistors you'll have to add anyway to get them on there if we want to do that. And the trick with the resistors is you turn them, you connect them up with the tops and the bottoms reversed on the adjacent ones, so that when you turn them sideways, they connect the opposite way. It's hard to describe, but it does work. And I put them side by side so that the pins of the two resistors are in a square, and then you can put a graphic next to it that's not components, but just a graphic with the resistors turned the other way to show how it'll connect the other way.
Okay, when I draw the schematic, I'm going to draw it with 4 zero ohm resistors. Is that correct?
Right, 2 resistors for each of the clock lines, each of the differential clock lines.
I will draw it. I'll draw it that way, and I'll let you and your layout guy figure it out.
Okay, I think I can maybe dig up a copy of a schematic that has that on there. I had to figure out what we did it on last. I think it was on a sensor board that we reversed the TXT and RXT. And I tell you what, it was, everybody laughed when I put it on there, but it saved our bacon.
Okay, well, I'll just put 4 resistors on and we'll call it a day.
Okay, sounds good.
Say, Dan, did you see my message down at that I sent you at the bottom?
No, let me look here real quick. The answer is no.
Well, you or Scotty can answer this for me. I never did get any kind of a description of, there's a fan on the top of the IQ2 box, and it has to plug into something, but I could never find a reference to what pins to plug it into.
Oh, that's a secret. I'll send you the pin numbers.
I know it, what the voltages are, but I figured there's got to be a convenient pin either on the FPGA or someplace.
It's on the header, and it has 5 volts and ground adjacent, so you can plug the pins right onto the side header.
Okay. And what about the RJ socket on the bottom under the micro SD card? What does that plug into?
The RJ socket? I don't understand. What's underneath the SD card? Oh, there's an 1/8 inch an RCA connector that is for a TR relay for an amplifier.
Oh, well, I don't need that, so I guess I don't need to plug it in.
Oh, it plugs onto one of the headers on the TX2 board, 2 millimeter headers on the TX2 board. I started the user manual for the IQ2, and I never finished it, so I suspect it's buried somewhere in there.
I did go to your site and pull everything off because I didn't want it to just disappear sometime.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Let's put a copy up on the Tangerine site, except it doesn't have anything to do with Tangerine.
I even found the images for the SOC board, which I never did get running.
Oh, for the socket board?
Yes, the one with it looks like the last image is 2016.
Oh, so you have a socket board and an adapter and TX2 and HF2, yes. So that image should work with those, except maybe you don't have the jumper set right.
Well, I only have one pair of TX2 HF2.
Yeah, so you have to disassemble your IQ2 to do that? Well, yes. You know, maybe we could fix you up with another set of boards since you have an IQ2 or a socket board, if you really get interested.
Well, I got frustrated when Anna was always grumbling about how hard it was to get the thing working.
Yeah, it is hard to get it working, but you should be able to just plug in that SD card programmed up and it should load up and run.
Well, I have to give that a try.
Yeah, see, I'm trying to think that we put an RBF file on the card, on the SD card. And the firmware actually takes care of programming the FPGA with that RBF. So You don't have to program anything ahead of time. You just have to plug the card in.
Oh, that's good.
Well, I haven't looked at that since 2016.
Well, I figured it was getting older and I ought to get a copy of it anyway, if just to have. So I gave your SVN a workout last weekend.
Okay, that's good. It just sits there idle most of the time anyway. And if it's offline, it's just because we had a power failure and I haven't set the server to come back on automatically. So I have to, I think I left it off for a whole week once before. I think it was you told me it was down.
Yeah, I noticed that. And that's what made me think, well, maybe I ought to make a copy of all this stuff just so I have it.
Yeah, you're our backup server.
Well, I've got a set now.
Okay, well, unless there's anything else, I guess we're over and up. So anything else from anyone?